Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In 1975, Greil Marcus's book Mystery Train first rumbled down the tracks. Music writing hasn't been the same since. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Still to come on our show today, vocalist Liz Wright is a rising star in the jazz world. She talks about her latest album, The Orchard. But first, in the early 70s, dissecting rock stars in print was the terrain of magazines like Rolling Stone and Tiger Beat. But with the publication of Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music, cultural critic Greil Marcus elevated rock from the ghetto of youth culture into the echelons of high culture. By mixing up analysis of artists like Elvis and Robert Johnson with quotes from Moby Dick and The Great Gatsby, Marcus redefined rock criticism and inspired countless rock scribes along the way. Mystery Train's fifth edition has just been published, and Greil Marcus joins us on the phone from his home in Berkeley, California. Greil, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Great to be with you again.
So 33 years ago, you wrote this book, which put rock on the same kind of platform, the same level of cultural discourse as literature, as poetry, as film. Is it still there 33 years later? Is rock music still that relevant and important?
Well, you know, to me it wasn't a matter of elevating the music to another plane. It was a matter of saying, look, this is American culture. This springs from the same sources that our literature does, that our movies do, our theater, other forms of music, whether it's jazz or Charles Ives, that the same currents that run through our culture are shaping and informing the music that we're hearing on the radio just as much as anything else. And the way to make sense of it and the way to realize that this is our culture, this is something that no one should be embarrassed to say moves them, tells them who they are, gives them an idea of what the possibilities of life are. And in that sense, you know, the music doesn't have to justify itself. If that approach had merit when I wrote the book, I think it has merit today.
All right. I'm interested to hear that you sort of started by saying it wasn't your intention to elevate rock and roll to the level of other things. What was the intention behind this book? It was pretty unprecedented back in 75.
Well, when I said it wasn't my intention to elevate it to a level, that's because I thought it was already there.
Okay.
you know, that's what I meant. And at one point, I wrote a piece on Robert Johnson, the great blues singer from Mississippi in the 1930s, after this book was published, and I essentially said, do you really want to argue that that what is going on in Moby Dick is deeper, has more emotional resonance, can affect a reader more than Johnson's music can affect a listener? I don't think it can. I don't think those distinctions are worth drawing. I think they're only damaging to people. So, you know, that hasn't changed. What has changed, what's so remarkable to me, is that having written this book quite a long time ago, all the stories the book tried to tell still go on. So every 7, 8, 10 years or so, I can go back to the book, turn to the back section called Notes and Discographies that was originally 25 pages long and is now about 225 pages, and continue the tales that these people inspired so long ago.
Well, the book is Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music. My guest is the author, Greil Marcus, And Soundcheck listeners, you can weigh in. Does rock and roll still matter in American culture the way it did back in 1975? You can leave a message on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. Check out my blog to see my thoughts, or at least my posings of the questions on the subject, which many people are already answering. And Greil, we have a couple of interesting responses already from some of our listeners. One who goes by the name Dr. Feelgood, writing from Jersey, says rock still exists in many forms, of course, but the mass media mostly focuses squarely on packaged teen pop stars and slick R&B and rap. That's what you'll hear on American Idol, and that's what brings in the widest range of fans. I mean, the whole idea of mass media has changed in the 33 years since you wrote the book. Is there a single kind of pop music, pop culture, the way there was back in the mid-70s?
No, there certainly isn't. You have to remember, we have to remember, it sometimes takes a wrenching effort to remind ourselves that in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and even the early 70s, media was much, much more controlled. It was much more uniform. In the 50s, when I was growing up, mass media was essentially three TV networks and Life magazine. That was about it. And we didn't consider top 40 radio part of the mass media. It seemed like, even though there was a top 40 station in every city, they played very different things. And you could tell where you were by the sounds of those stations. Today, radio stations, to the degree that they're still playing pop music, are very much formatted nationwide, if not more than nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
But there are countless media outlets today. So while we may say, okay, the mass media is giving us Hannah Montana and that's all we get, there are millions of other points of access, whether they're blogs, whether they're internet radio stations, whether they're
The idea of someone like Elvis Presley, who burst upon the American pop culture scene in a way that affected a huge swath of the public, it would be hard to imagine that. I mean, nowadays, you know, we're talking about the most pop of our pop stars reaching maybe a quarter of the population. That's considered fantastic.
Well, or less.
When
Elvis appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time in 1956. At least according to the surveys, 82% of the people who were watching TV that night were watching him. That's, you know, you could say that's unthinkable today, but it was unthinkable then.
And yet it happened.
I don't think any of us really know, really understands what the appearance of someone who seems to threaten or call into question the whole national identity is. I mean, look, a month or two ago, nobody in the country except for some people in Chicago had heard of Jeremiah Wright. Today, it seems like the whole country has heard of Jeremiah Wright, and they're watching sound clips of some of his sermons 24 hours a day. And this story is being pumped and pumped and pumped. So Jeremiah Wright is a figure who has emerged as a boogeyman to frighten the country. And I'm not going to draw, you know, some kind of slick parallel between Elvis and Jeremiah Wright, but in terms of the way an image, a voice, and a face can appear to the whole country all at once, that's still happening.
Elvis Presley, I mean, many people refer to your book, Mystery Train, as your Elvis book, because of the four major subjects, Randy Newman, the band, Sly Stone, and Elvis, it's the Elvis chapter that is bigger than the other three put together, and there's so much detail in it. Let's hear a little bit from one of the early Sun Sessions by Elvis Presley, the Milk Cow Blues, first made famous by the Georgia blues man Kokomo Arnold, famous being a relative term there, but genuinely famous by Elvis Presley.
Well, I woke up in the morning and I looked out the door. I can tell an old milk cow, I can tell me when she's alone. If you saw my milk cow, he's rapping off on home. I had no milking butter,
try to reach right. Day by day, I do a little prayer for, get out on your knees and pray for you gonna need. You're gonna need your loving daddy's help someday. And you're gonna be sorry treating me this way. Oh, let's milk it.
The Milk Cow Blues Boogie, Elvis Presley from the Sun Sessions. We're speaking with Greil Marcus, author of the book Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music. The fifth edition is now out. And Greil, you know the old complaint that Elvis was simply repackaging black music for mainstream white audiences and was not in and of himself an original artist. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, I wrote the whole chapter in this book to argue against that, to say that this was someone who was not only an extraordinarily creative, inventive artist in his own right, but he was also someone who knew what he was doing, who knew what he wanted both in terms of creating himself in his own image, in the image he carried in his head, and as someone who wanted to sound a certain way and was able to do that. You know, in Memphis in 1954 and 1955, you didn't hear black people, black musicians saying, oh, you know, this is just some white boy ripping off our music. They were saying, this sounds great. This sounds different. They were a whole lot more open to Elvis's music than so many people who have come along in the decades since to try and reduce that accomplishment. I mean, the fact is, you just listen to what you just played. We listen to that, and you hear an exuberance. You hear a sense of freedom. You hear a command that is different from what anybody else ever brought to that song.
Well, you wrote
Bob
that
Wills, whether it was Kokomo or Arnold.
You wrote it contains any America you might want to conjure, which, you know, when 82% of Americans with television sets on are watching you on that television set, you're reaching an awful lot of America. What did you mean? What did you mean by any America you might want to conjure?
Well, I meant that in Elvis's Sun recordings, the recordings that he made in 54 and 55 in Memphis, really just a handful, you can traverse the whole terrain of the country, whether it's Puritan, the Puritan Gothic state of mind, where America is really a haunted house, the frontier, where everything seems possible, and there seem to be no limits on what you can imagine for yourself and what you can actually go out and find. A settled community where really it's the church, where everybody meets and where everybody understands who they are. A big city where, again, like the frontier, the possibilities of inventing yourself and finding a new life seem endless. All those things seem to me alive and dramatized in the recordings that Elvis made at the beginning of his career.
We're speaking with Greil Marcus. The fifth edition of his book, Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music, has just come out. The book was written back in 75, very different cultural landscape then. Some of the comments coming in on the soundcheck page of our website. Joe here in New York writes, rock and roll is in a sorry state. Most young acts don't have enough of a sense of history. It's not their fault. They actually have to do research. The fragmentation of mass media doesn't help either. And Paul in New Jersey writes, I don't know if it, rock and roll, still matters in the way it used to. While I find records such as The Clash, Gang of Four, Highway 61 Revisited, etc., to be life-affirming, life-changing experiences, younger generations have too many distractions to find rock and roll to be anything more than something to fill the iPod up with. Now, you're finding still, Greil, a lot of stuff to unpack out of these classic rock and roll songs, the Elvis songs, as you were just talking about, but One of those things that you're unpacking is this idea of the Puritan America. And one of the enduring surprises of your book is to find that Puritan strain in the music of Robert Johnson, the great bluesman whom you mentioned before, and who, legend has it, went down to the crossroads to sell his soul to the devil. Where does the Puritan streak come out in the music of Robert Johnson?
It comes out on this sense that a sense, as Herman Melville once said, no man can weigh this world without throwing in something like original sin to make the balance. You have to have some idea that's so ghastly, that's so enormous, to make sense of our lives, our desires, our sense of guilt. And Robert Johnson's music, taking a sense of the Great Awakening that spread through Georgia and the rest of the South in the 18th century, a sense of the devil, a sense of sin, a sense that people cannot control their own lives. They don't even know who they are. They're not at home in this world. They're here by some kind of terrible existential mistake. That is the Puritan sense of the world, that we are not good enough for this world. And that's the sense that you hear in Robert Johnson. And I feel that people like Jonathan Edwards and Robert Johnson would have had a lot to say to each other, would have understood each other. If Jonathan Edwards could have heard Robert Johnson sing, if Robert Johnson could have heard Jonathan Edwards preach, I think they would be speaking the same language.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Robert Johnson's music. These are the Stop Breakin' Down Blues from the great Mississippi bluesman.
Every time I'm walking down the street, some pretty mama start breaking down with me. Stop breaking down. Yeah, stop breaking down. The stuff I got to bust your brains out, baby, it'll make you lose your mind. I can't walk the streets now, can't contemplate my mind. Some no good woman, she starts breaking down. Stop breaking down. Please stop breaking down. The stuff I got going to bust your brain down, it'll make you lose your mind.
Robert Johnson, the Stop Breaking Down Blues. We're talking with Greil Marcus, the author of Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music. And Greil, one of the neat things about each of the subsequent editions of Mystery Train, this fifth one included, is that each time you're able to kind of, as you said earlier, go back to the notes section and the discographies and expand them. Back in 75, if you wanted to talk about Robert Johnson's influence, you mentioned, obviously, Eric Clapton and Cream and the Rolling Stones. Now the expanded notes have like a top 10 of Robert Johnson covers, and it includes contemporary artists like the White Stripes. What do you think the White Stripes bring to the music of Robert Johnson?
Well, you know, the White Stripes really have a kind of acrid, noisy, industrial feel to their music. I always feel like I'm inside of a Ford plant when I listen to them on an assembly line. And they bring that harshness to it, and also a sense of distance, of wanting to close the gap between themselves and someone who clearly has remained such a great inspiration to them and who's been dead since 1938. So there's a reaching you can hear. With Cat Power, she has a version of Come On In My Kitchen that made my top 10 this time. You don't hear any distance at all. You hear someone who has wormed her way inside that song, and which I think is what she brings to almost any song by someone else that she covers.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear the White Stripes version. This is Stop Breaking Down.
Thank you.
the White Stripes version of Robert Johnson's Stop Breaking Down. We're speaking with Greil Marcus, whose fifth edition of Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music, has just been published. Back in the day, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, Greil, when you and people like Lester Bangs were first making your name, you've talked about this in other interviews, you felt like you were just kind of making it up as you went along. The landscape has changed, and now we have, you know, almost anyone with access to a keyboard computer can make it up as they go along. You know, there's bloggers and whatnot. Do you feel, you know, do you see a parallel between what you were doing in the late 60s and what bloggers today are doing?
You know, it depends on who you're reading. Most of the blogs that I see, music writing blogs, are not making it up as they're going along. They're imitating something that's already there. I find much more inventive writing online about television than I do about music. There's a site called Television Without Pity, which is absolutely hilarious, and manages to take television with utmost seriousness and also with an overwhelming sense of absurdity, kind of like the Firesign Theater
right.
used to do.
So let me ask you a final question, because we're just about out of time. But if you were starting out today, would you be writing about television, or would you still be writing about rock and roll?
You know, rock and roll is my subject. It's where I get my ideas. It's where I get my obsessions. And everything starts with a song for me. So I'm sure I'd be writing about music if I were starting today.
Well, the book is Mystery Train, and it was not written today or yesterday, but 33 years ago. The fifth edition is just out. Mystery Train, Images of America in Rock and Roll Music. Greil Marcus. Greil, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
And coming up in just a moment, our CD picks of the week. And then coming up in just a little while, singer Liz Wright, whom you're hearing in the background, talks about the trip home to Georgia that inspired the songs she wrote for her new album. This is Soundcheck.
My heart, my mind, my soul, my feelings over you, my tears, my touch, remember all that I am. When you gonna pick up the phone and call me, tell me I can come over. I got my ticket and my bags are packed, my coat is hanging over my shoulder. Time is passing and it's getting late, this heart of mine just can't wait. After all that we've been through,